Good morning, everybody. How are we? 10 days to Christmas Eve. Are you ready? All right. Good deal. Good deal. We are in our teaching series called Promise. We have been looking at the Old Testament promises and how those promises get fulfilled in the New Testament. We are glad that you are here today. It's going to be a great day. I got a baptism today. You got to love baptisms, you know, little babies. Oh. We are going to look at Matthew chapter 2. Let's go ahead and read that this morning with some chutzpah. Here we go. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and the teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gold and incense and myrrh. You know, people say to me all the time, "Brian, why bother with reading the Old Testament? It is weird. There are all these killing of innocent furry animals that happen. There's plenty of violence to go around. It is a strange book. The God of the Old Testament does not seem like the God of the New Testament. I mean, Jesus, who doesn't love Jesus, right? All the little children come to me and he's wonderful and happy. And the God of the Old Testament seems like, you know, he has bad tacos all the time the night before. He's just sort of grumpy and yeah. I mean, I've had a number of conversations with many of you over the last 3 months or so as we've been working our way through the story. Lots of Old Testament questions have crept up. And the story that Adam read for us this morning out of the book of Micah isn't really the kind of Christmas hope that you want to hear, right? I mean, if you listen closely, there's all kinds of promises of destruction and this sort of thing. It's definitely a story that has a whole lot of death and hopelessness. Micah says, listen, pain, destruction are going to come upon you because God is coming. Just you wait. Great. Happiness. Sounds wonderful. But if you look throughout the Old Testament, there's always hope. I mean, you look at situations of hopelessness, and God always follows those situations of hopelessness with great hope, pain, and hope. It sort of sounds like the 11 o'clock news, doesn't it? Stay classy, people. Yeah, I mean, it does. You know, 11 o'clock news, it sounds like 11 murders at 11 most of the time, doesn't it? The first 11 minutes, you look at all of the stuff in the world. And the amazing thing is for as much as we say the Old Testament is disconnected from the world we live in today, I don't think so at all. I think it reads very much like the world that we live in today. The names and faces have just changed. The storylines are very much the same. Very much the same. Hopelessness, exile, hurt, brokenness, greed, distrust, military conquest, fears of wars. Does that not sound like the world that we live in? And you're saying, lighten up, dude. We're like 10 days to Christmas Eve. Where's the happiness, man? Where's the love around this place? But hope keeps us going, doesn't it? I mean, whether you've got sickness, whether you've got a family problem, you're in need of forgiveness, there's some kind of life challenge, hope is the very fuel that keeps us going. It's what helps us wake up in the morning. We desire to be healed. We desire to be forgiven. We desire a new day. We hope to see God at work in our lives, these sort of things. And the reason we believe in hope is because God is the God of hope. God is the God of hope. I mean, God's always bringing hope. In all of these Old Testament stories of destruction and despair, there's always an element of hope. Think about all of the different characters throughout the Old Testament. We will pick out a couple of them. Abram. Now, there's an interesting guy. So because we have some young ears in the audience, we're going to do the PG version of the story. But Abram decides it'd be a great thing if he let his wife, Sarah, hang out with Pharaoh for a night. Are we tracking? Yeah, not a good call, Abram. Abram decides, you know, hey, I have this promise of a child who's going to come. Hey, you know what? Maybe I'll go visit one of my servants for the night. Not a good choice, Abram. And yet out of all of these situations that bring about brokenness and hopelessness, there's great hope because Abram will indeed have a son named Isaac. Abram will indeed make it to the promised land. Or we might think about the Israelites. Now, I mean, if you ever were to read a great book on mismanagement, there is the company to look at. Here's a group of people for 400 years. They're crying out to God, help us. We're slaves. This is miserable. Then God finally brings them out. It's hope that gets them there. God takes them out of Egypt. And what do they say? We want to go back. And yet out of hopelessness in the desert, out of making idols and everything else, God will eventually deliver them to the promised land. Or we might think about the disciples. There, we'll make it to the New Testament. Here's a group of guys who abandoned Jesus on Friday to die. And on Sunday morning, they're sitting in this upper room. The doors are locked. They're fearful that they're the ones to be executed next. All of a sudden, Mary Magdalene comes along and says, Jesus is risen. And they run to the tomb. They don't walk. They run. Why? Hope. Hope that Jesus is alive. Hope is the fuel that in our worst circumstances, we see God at his best. And as we think about Micah, as we think about our day today, I mean, the stories are very much similar. Corruption and war and destruction and pain and despair. And that was Micah's world. The timeline was around 500 or 600 BC. The northern part of Israel had been invaded. The southern part of Israel was next. Time of great hopelessness. The kings were corrupt. The religious leaders had led the people astray to worship false gods. And Micah says, destruction is coming. Weep and wail. Mourn. Death and destruction are here. Woe is going to come upon you. Disaster and ruin. God is coming for you. I mean, wow. Not the kind of stuff that sounds like hope, is it? Does it? No. But it's out of that. It's out of hopelessness that Micah gives us a word of hope. That out of the pain will come healing. And it starts at Micah 4:6. He says, in that day. Now you think that's just, you know, three little words, but those are three very important words. In that day signals that a new day is coming, that hope is on the way, that God does have a plan. And even though we might sometimes thwart or disrupt or delay that plan, that ultimately God will fulfill it. And that's our great hope. That no matter how far we walk from God, no matter what we do to disrupt his plans in our life, that God ultimately will come through because God is the God of hope. In that day, God will gather the lame, assemble the exiles and the grieved, rule in Jerusalem, restore the kingdom. Hope is coming. Hope always comes out of suffering, doesn't it? Healing always comes out of suffering, doesn't it? Why do you think that is? You know, a lot of people, they mistakenly think that God has to bring suffering upon us so that we will feel hope. Or that God has to do some kind of horrible thing in our lives so then, you know, we'll grow this newfound appreciation for him. But this isn't really the way that it works. More often than not, at least maybe this is the case in my life, maybe not in yours, I figure out a way to delay God's plan or screw up God's plan. And I go, that wasn't such a good idea, Brian. But out of that, out of the suffering that I bring upon myself, I also recognize great hope because God's the God who can heal all things. God's the fixer of the broken. You know, many times the reason that hope is born out of hopelessness is that we don't have anywhere else to turn. You ever had that moment in your life where you've tried the self-help books, you've tried, thinking on something, you've tried talking it to death, you've tried to fix it in every possible way imaginable until you finally say, God, I need help down here. You ever come to that point where you're praying on your knees and crying, God, will you please fix this? Yeah. I mean, I imagine every one of us has had that kind of moment. Why does hope come at that time? Well, because we realize that what we need most isn't our own self-help, isn't our own fixes, isn't our own genius plans, but we need God. That's hope. And the secret to gathering the lame and the exiles and the grieved and restoring the kingdom is that the people in Micah's culture, they need a new kind of leader. They don't need a king. They don't need a dictator. They don't need, you know, a strong-armed kind of person. What Micah says is you need a shepherd. Now, that's a very different image for a leader. Not a kind of king who manipulates and uses power and wealth for personal gain, but somebody who glorifies God alone. And so this is what Micah says. He says, why do you now cry aloud? Have you no king? Has your counselor perished that pain seizes you like that of a woman in labor? Writhe in agony, O daughter of Zion, like a woman in labor, for now you must leave the city to camp in the open field. You will go to Babylon. There you will be rescued. There the Lord will redeem you out of the hand of your enemies. Out of hopelessness comes great hope. And he continues, and here it is, and this is the tie. You're wondering, what does Micah have to do with Matthew? Here's the connection between Micah and Matthew this morning. But you, Bethlehem, Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come one for me who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from of old. From ancient times, he will stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord and the majesty of the name the Lord is God. And they will live securely. Then his greatness will reach to the ends of the earth and he will be their peace. The promise, yeah, the promise is for a different kind of leader. For a shepherd kind of leader, that the Messiah will be not like any other king. Last week we talked about kings and kingdoms. Yes, we talked about 2 Samuel chapter 7 and how God promised to David, the greatest king in the history of Israel, that out of his line would come an even powerful, more powerful leader, the Messiah, whose kingdom would never end. And he would be a different kind of king for a different kind of people and a different kind of kingdom. And what Micah says is, guess what? He's coming from Bethlehem. Now, to us today, we go, yeah, well, we know the story, Bethlehem, yeah. But folks, this is like saying that the Messiah is going to come from Mackville, Kentucky. Mandy and I lived there for 4 years. It's a town of 204 people. I mean, you wouldn't expect that, would it? Folks, Messiah coming from Mackville. I mean, that would be the response, right? What? I mean, we would expect Messiahs to come from Louisville or Lexington or New York or L.A. or, you know, some kind of big town where Messiah, okay, right, this guy is going to be enculturated, he's going to be smart, he went to all the best schools, he's Ivy League. I mean, this dude gets it, he's got the right resume. And what Micah says is, coming from Bethlehem, you know, little town, about 500 people, somewhere out in the back 40, that's where he's coming from. I mean, everybody in Micah's culture probably looked at Micah like, you know, they looked like, what kind of quaaludes are you on, dude? Are you kidding me? No Messiah's coming from Bethlehem. And yet we shouldn't be surprised because who's the Messiah from? He's from David's line. He's from David's hometown. He'll be greater than David because he's not going to be an earthly king. He's a heavenly kind of king. And what he's going to show us, folks, is that we shouldn't put our hope in our circumstances. We should put our hope in God. I mean, there's an important lesson for all of us. How many of us put our hope in our circumstances? What are you talking about, Brian? I mean, how often have you said, I just hope that this will work out. I just hope for a new job. I hope that we get that house that we wanted. I hope that I get a bigger paycheck. I hope that, I mean, and this goes on and on, right? I mean, it starts from when we're little folks. I hope that I get the right Christmas present, right? I hope that she likes me. I hope that he likes me and because he's so dreamy. I mean, we do this from the time that we're kids, but this is a hope that's rooted in circumstances that we're not sure are going to come to pass or not. But if our hope is in God, and if God is the God of the future, if God is the God who heals and forgives and saves, ultimately, the circumstances might work out, but what the scriptures share with us is that God works for the good of those who love God. And sure, my circumstances may not end the way that I want them to, but in the end, I know my future is secure. And that's what Micah is saying. Micah's saying, man, it looks bad now. Like 11 murders at 11, they ain't got nothing on us. It's horrible. Destruction's on the way, but you know what? Put your hope in God because that's where the future lies. Sometimes, as much as we don't want to talk about it, life can feel like the 11 o'clock news, can it? And I don't know what your pain or your struggle or your hurt or your challenges or the crisis that you have in your life today, but here's the question that I want you to begin to reflect on. Will you put your hope in God? Will you put your hope there? We have the joy of celebrating a baptism this morning. And this is a high and holy moment. And as we talk about hope, what we're anticipating is the hope of the day that Emmy Day stands before this community of faith and shares her own faith story with each one of us, that she is indeed a full-fledged child of God who puts all of her hope and all of her trust in him. And so I'm going to ask Kyle and Casey and little Emmy to come before us as we celebrate this beautiful day of baptism. You know, I want to fast forward about 500 years with you. So we're talking about Micah out of a situation of hopelessness and brokenness, and yet this great hope that Micah gives the people of God. Hey, hope is on the way. There is a God who is coming for you. He's the Messiah. He's coming from Bethlehem. We fast forward 500 years, and it's like same story, different day, right? And there's just a new guy who's in charge. They went from the Persians to the Greeks to the Romans, and now in charge is a guy named Herod, and Herod is not the boy that you want your daughter to bring home as a prom date. I mean, he is bad, bad news. He has some serious challenges in life, we might say. I mean, here's Herod's resume. He hated all the Jewish leaders and limited their power. He's insecure about his leadership and would execute anybody who disagreed with anything he said. He executed his wife's brother and his brother's wife in public. He had 10 wives, two of whom had the same first name. You know, maybe coincidence, maybe not. He killed his mother-in-law, and then eventually he ends up killing all the baby boys in Bethlehem. So, I mean, Herod, not a nice guy. I mean, some serious issues in Herod's life. And in fact, when Matthew says in Matthew 2:1, now it was the time of King Herod, I mean, there's almost like a set of parentheses that need to be put there that says something to the effect of, you know, Herod, the guy with all of the serious mental instability and problems in his life, that guy. The guy who was reigning over us, the guy who wreaked all kinds of havoc and destruction in our lives, he's in charge. And what happens is Matthew brings the connection with Micah in the east and Jesus in the west in Jerusalem. And he says, hey, there's some guys from the east, and they're called Magi, and they are making their trek to come see this child who's to be born. So from the very area that Israel was exiled to come three visitors who've traveled hundreds upon hundreds of miles to see this child who is going to be born. Now, we a lot of times they call them the three wise men, right? Is that what you kind of grew up knowing? I realize the reason they're called the three wise men, break apart wise men to wise men, the reason they're called three wise men is they brought three wise gifts. They're magi. They're astrologers. They're guys who look to the heavens and, you know, give you your daily horoscope. Are we tracking? I mean, these are the guys, like 1-900-MISS-CLEO. right? I mean, these are the guys who come from the East. Sure, they probably looked at some scripture from Daniel, because Daniel wrote, and somebody raised this question in the earlier service, Daniel wrote the book of Daniel over in Persia where they're coming from, but they saw the star and they said, we've been waiting for that. We're going. We know that a king is coming. And when they show up and they say, hey, everybody, they show up in Jerusalem. Hey, everybody, where's the new king? This is what it says. He, meaning Herod, was disturbed and all of Jerusalem with him. Now, let's put a couple things together. We're not surprised Herod is disturbed, right? Because Herod has some serious issues going on in his life, right? I mean, anybody who dares to challenge his power or authority, what's going to happen? Yeah, dirt nap. I mean, not going to work out so good for them. So we are not surprised that Herod, you know, he is not exactly happy. In fact, the word disturbed literally means to have mental and physical anxiety about an event that's about to come to pass. But the disturbing part is not only is Herod disturbed, but who's disturbed with him? Now think about this. We're talking about a group of people who have waited since the days of Micah for 500 plus years for hope to come. And now some dudes from the east side come over and they say, hey, where's the king? And they're all physically and mentally having some anxiety over this. Are you kidding me? You would think they'd be excited, wouldn't you? Hey, Herod, his reign's coming to an end. Finally, we're going to be rid of this guy. It's going to be great. But they're disturbed with him. The chief priests, the teachers of the law, everybody in Jerusalem, they're all freaked out. What are you talking about, another king? Now you tell me where they put their hope. I imagine much of their hope was built upon a piece of keeping Herod happy so their lives wouldn't be miserable. Is that a hope of circumstances? Or hope that's placed in God, you tell me. Maybe it's they didn't want to lose their power. Finally, the chief priests and the teachers of the law, they've risen up to the top of the heap. We don't want to lose our position. I'm disturbed. Who's this new king? Will we have to figure out how to placate him so we can still be in charge and in control? And so Herod calls the chief priests and the teachers of the law to find out where this king is, because he doesn't know. And this is what they say from the book of Micah. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel. So they say to the Magi and to Herod, Bethlehem. He'll be born in Bethlehem. Now, let's put this together a little bit more. The chief priests and teachers of the law who have been waiting 500 years for the Messiah to show up, they sell out the one who's there to liberate them to the one who's oppressing them. Wow. That gets even better. You're like, how does it get any better than this? It's even better. So they say he's in Bethlehem, and that's the end of it. They don't say, you know, just, hey, he's in Bethlehem. Micah told us all about it. He's in Bethlehem. Any idea how far Bethlehem is from Jerusalem? 4.5 miles. 4.5 miles. The deliverer you've been waiting for 500 years is 4.5 miles south. And do they go visit? Do they investigate? Do they say, think we better check it out? No. 4.5 miles south. Are you kidding me? I mean, the average human being can walk 3.1 miles in an hour. So we're talking about an hour and 20-minute trek to go 4.5 miles south to see if the person they've been waiting for, to see if God is going to have shown up. And what did they do? Yeah, he's an hour and 20 minutes walk. Help yourself. Go that way. What gives? Is nobody else disturbed by this? I mean, come on. Yeah, I mean, folks, put this together. This morning, this would be like me saying to you, the cure for cancer is at St. Matthew's Mall. I know that your horse is broken down. You're a your horse is without horsepower. But here's the deal. If you walk an hour and 20 minutes, that way, cure for cancer there. I'm good. What? I mean, who does that? Who does that? Where's their hope? Is it in God or is it in their circumstances? I think it's very much rooted in their circumstances. We're in charge. We're in control. Yep, we know what the Bible says. We know about this prophecy. Whatever, dude. Hour and 20 minutes. Walk right that way. I'm sure you'll find him. Come back. Tell us how it is. And then Herod says what? Let me know if you find him so I can go and worship him too. Sure, Herod. I mean, we see how that's all going to work out. Come on, man. You know, I think what Matthew has told us is something very, very powerful this morning. That so often God shows up and it requires our participation. And what do? Hour and 20 minutes? A little bit of effort? You got the Cliff Notes? Right? Yeah. I mean, you know, Jesus is a kind of shepherd that isn't a leader of all kinds of great power, position, or promises of people to the world, but his call is to abandon everything and come and follow him. Yeah. We're 10 days from Christmas Eve. Can you believe that? It sneaks up every year, doesn't it? 10 days. Here's the question. How well have you prepared for Christmas Eve? I mean, I know everybody's been shopping and we got parties to go to and all of this great stuff, but how well have you prepared? Are you ready? What do you mean? Like, he's already been born, Brian, okay? I mean, we can't do that again. No, I mean, has he been born in you? Has he been born in you? He is coming. Look up. Look up. And I think the danger for us in this Christmas season is that we get so consumed with all of the consumption around us that we miss out. He's only 4.5 miles away. Let me encourage you with this word today. Keep going. Keep going. I mean, whatever your situation is, whatever your problem is, whatever your challenge is, whatever your brokenness is, whatever it is the problem you're having in your life, keep going. I mean, God is the God of hope. It's only 4.5 miles away. And if you see somebody around you that feels hopeless, go with them. And carry them if you have to. Is it not worth an hour and 20 minutes of your time? I mean, we all know that, boy, we're supposed to pray and read the scriptures and come to church and invite people for Christmas Eve and serve down at Fourth Avenue or wherever. But do you do so? Because I think the difference between the Magi and the chief priests and teachers of the law, it's only 4.5 miles. One missed out, and the other group beheld God's glory. You tell me which is better. Let's pray.